coding like it's 1985, like tweeting like it's 2009. Come on, let's get 2020.
Are you spending too much time debugging instead of writing cool new features? Want to debug up to 40 times faster? Embold's Code Quality Engine will not only pinpoint exactly where your bugs are, but also tell you which ones you need to fix first. Find out how at embold.io/bettercode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast. Hi, Paul. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, how are you?
Happy 2021.
We're here in the new year. I hope all of your apps and services aren't broken. You know, time is difficult. Things turn over.
Things do.
Yeah, time turns over. But I have a few topics for us to chat about. It's a few things that jumped out at me. The number one thing, which I thought both of you would enjoy, is coding like it's 1985. Apparently, retro coding fun with BBC Basic is hot. Have you seen this at all? Have you seen this Twitter account?
Yeah, I know this little guy. Like, if the Raspberry Pi is too overpowered for you, which, I mean, the Raspberry Pi is an incredibly powerful machine. Britain has its own culture of microcomputing with the Sinclair computers and stuff like that. And so they made a little educational computer that's like the size of half a credit card that's got some little lights on it that you can use to learn to program. And I think they gave it to millions and millions of kids.
Millions of kids in the US?
No, in the UK.
Yeah, what's the relationship to BBC, the broadcasting?
Well, because the BBC is a beast. Like, BBC Micro was an early computer. I mean, they have always been on the forefront. Actually, a lot of the early influential web people that came out of the UK were former BBC people because they...
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, because they got early into the web. They were big adopters of Rails.
And you get a little bit of tax when you sell every, like, TV or computer, and then that flows back into making that stuff, right?
That's right.
That's how they fund all that stuff.
No,
The thing I liked about this BBC one was that, there's this Twitter account, BBC Microbot, and it runs your tweet as code and replies with a video. And so people have created over 10,000 basic programs in, I guess, 140 characters or less, which is a nice little constraint, you know? Pieces of art, even all the way up to ray tracers.
280 characters now.
Oh, excuse me. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so interesting. Look, this bot has like 7,000 followers. And people tweet code at it, and it's very ugly, the code. But what comes back is very cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of like
it's like an emulator.
You know, you got to like squeeze it in there. Yeah.
Well, I love that you can tweet at it and get an animation back.
That's awesome.
It's like this is the world's worst supercomputer. This is like the absolute wrong way to do client server sort of based programming, but it's pretty great.
Yeah, when you're ready to upload and get the Enterprise Edition, just tweet it at us, and we'll get that wrapped and send it back to you.
Yeah, no, somebody wrote a ray tracer. Okay, this is very good. So I love these little code golfy things, and actually what I love are I love little constrained environments where you can think thoughts about programming that aren't the regular thoughts that you think. Like, the regular thoughts you think are, I need to parse the HTML on 2 million web pages in order to extract key values and put that into a SQL database, right?
Fun
and this
stuff.
Is like, I want to make 3D letters dance, and I only have five lines to do it. Oh, there was one. I'll look it up while we're talking. There was one in JavaScript that was like this. It was like you had 140 characters of JavaScript, and it's a little tiny constrained environment where you can only really set a few variables. And so anyway, this stuff is great. I love this stuff.
Well, so I can speak for myself that those things have really, I feel like I kind of start from the place of, but does it scale? You know what I mean? And for any of these, the answer is no. But there's a lot of really amazing art online built by coders that never think that question, like never are considering answering that question, just want to do something cool and walk away from it. And Paul, I find that you really, that's something that you do a bunch. You just do something cool and then you're done. I wonder what that is. I wonder what that difference is in coders.
For me, that's because every time I would do something cool and people would get excited about it, it would become this like lifelong commitment. And so I learned to just literally run away.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
what was the one where people were sending you all their health information, Paul? That one sounded.
Oh, that was anxiety box. No, that's right. I got 7,000 people telling me what their worst anxieties were.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, that was a rough one. And then Tilde Club, where I had thousands of people asking for a login on a single Unix server on AWS, and eventually someone adopted that. If you don't say this is just a fun experiment, you will live a life of guilt.
But do you start off, like what, I feel like when I start a project, my thought is I want this thing to grow. When you start off, or like I don't ever find myself like hacking around and like, what if I could do this thing and it would be cool and then that would be the end? Is that what you're thinking when you do these things?
Oh, thinking. Look, it's not sane, right? I'm like, oh, this will be fun.
I don't know. I think I've observed that there's like people that, I know, don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I've been trying to figure this out for a while. There's people that are like, oh, I can build the game of life with 12 drones. That's so exciting. I'm going to do it. And then there's other people that are like, why would I, what, that's dumb. Like, I don't need that.
This is the classic, boy, you seem to have a lot of time on your hands, which is one of those things that makes my entire body just like, just shake.
Yeah. Like if you have a lot of time on your hands, your entire body shakes, or if people
say No. It's when people say that, right? Oh, it's okay. Just folly. Just like there's room for folly in this world. And most things we do are folly. I think like, you know, these are just funny, shiny, pretty pictures that people enjoy making. To me, I look at this almost in exactly the same way. And this is a loaded comparison because our society is broken. But I look at people doing weird little animations in the same way that I look at knitting or I look at other crafts. Like it's just craft.
Yeah. I love that. I love looking at it that way.
Right. And so it's just like, what are the, when you go to BBC Microbot on Twitter, what you see is the effect of craft. And I mean, frankly, the difference between this and like a complex knitting pattern is like it starts to approach zero. It's just people think about the patterns and they get the materials, or, you know, same with embroidery. Like you're following patterns, you're using techniques and craft to generate an aesthetic effect, which frankly might be about as long lasting or less so than a throw pillow or a picture that you put on the wall. It just is what it is. And that what happens is everything is prioritized as what's going to be big and make an enormous amount of difference. And I feel that because we prioritize that, and that's sort of like venture capital culture, we just miss a lot. And very few people are going to get the chance to like have a breakout hockey stick growth company that has to scale infinitely in the cloud, right? So like, are all the other experiences, they're valid too. They just don't come with enormous amounts of money trailing them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like the idea of comparing to art.
It's craft. It's craft. It's knitting. It's computer knitting. I wish they would call it that.
Sarah, you mentioned like, taking, you know, a little bit of time to do something, you know, like breaking off maybe focus work for a while, create a little something, send it to the Twitter bot. I wanted to share something with you. Do either of you, have you ever participated in sort of life logging as one of the functions of being an engineer or a programmer?
I try not
to. Wait, what's life logging?
This is from the Sample Size blog. It's my year in data, which is, you know, a nice thing to do. Good way to wrap it up. This person measured their life in 15-minute increments on a Google Sheet for a year.
They have too much time on their hands.
Yeah, this is another one of those things where I'm like, really interesting. I think this is something, being in this field for 20 years, I've seen, I mean, this is excellent. And this is what this person done is great. And I bet it has benefited their life a bunch to learn these things. I've seen lots of iterations on this in the last 20 years. I think the real challenge when you end up with a picture. So one thing that they did is they pulled out 15-minute intervals and color coded them of their life for a whole year. And the thing that I have seen people always struggle with when they end up with this much data is, okay, now what? Like, what does this mean? And so the good thing is that this blog is great because this person really digs down into, there's a lot of experience. This person is doing some experiments to change things based on this data.
God, it's beautiful.
It's a lot.
It's actually like they did a Google spreadsheet. And I mean, I was joking when if people want to log their life in 15-minute intervals, bless them. That is great. And it's a kind of, they chose lovely colors and it is, you can see their sleep.
Yeah, thank goodness they did that because sometimes it's really hard to stomach if they don't.
Right. Well, they knew that to really optimize, they'd have to gamify it. So then they also created a point system and then gave themselves points, which it says, my monkey brain is crazy about points. So once you get the data, there's so much you can do with it.
So, you know, what is the fundamental I'll go meta for a second, and because I think about this a lot, right? Like, I think whenever you start to do things repeatedly on the computer, you kind of do start to quantify a little bit. And you look at your GitHub commits, and you look at, like, you look at the amount of email you receive. Like, we all have a sense of generating all this data, and this person did something about it. And frankly, I've seen this done a lot before, but they really have a great eye for color.
Yeah, thank goodness. For them.
You know, just here's what I love about this is you actually see it's a work of philosophy, right? Like, it's what is the purpose of a human? And because the computer lets you track 15-minute intervals, you can see them sort of categorize themselves as to what they are and what they do. And so, you know, human function, the boring stuff I need to do to stay alive, showering, making food, eating and things like that, on trips, also setting tents, etc. And so, like, you see this person is using the computer to interrogate the actual meaning of their life as they live it.
And I mean, we all have ways of doing it. Asking the computer is one of them.
Yes. That's right.
Everyone
That's right.
has so, their own way, yeah.
I mean, I celebrate this. Where it gets risky to me is then you see, you know, I'm not going to read the Hacker News thread, but then it's like everyone starts to out-quantify each other.
And, yeah, I've seen that.
You know, when all of the problems of data science get brought down to the human level, it gets really right. tricky.
Yeah, I appreciated your blog post, but have you tried wearing a Fitbit and correlating that to resting heart rate? Because otherwise, yeah, no.
Yeah,
exactly.
Out quantify.
Like, exactly.
I did think that was very Soylent of them to say, like, I spent 1 hour and 20 minutes per day doing the human functions, eating, showering. Is that a lot or not? I don't know. The procrastination time on average 10 minutes per day is definitely less than most people. So very productive human being here, despite writing this elaborate blog post. And they've even got a drop down here. You can got a nice little drop down here on the blog. You can
I love add that.
Different categories and graph them against one another. I love it.
Yeah, that was neat. So it looks like they did a lot less procrastinating after the beginning of the pandemic. If you look at her data, there's a drop down. Right. You can choose procrastinating. And it looks like the beginning of the year, lots of procrastinating. I wonder if that's when this project took up more time. Watching documentaries.
Well, that's the beautiful irony of this. There's definitely hours and hours spent getting this right.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting back to, there's a consciousness here that's really interesting, which is I'm going to use the computer to be more aware of my time. It's a good right. tool for that, right? Like, it's what's tricky is then it's where I think we get in trouble is we decide that this is a predictive system. And it's like, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to get rid of all procrastination. You know, very rarely do you see anybody say, we should celebrate our time procrastinating because that is joyful mm-hmm. time in which we are playing and exploring and getting ourselves ready to do other kinds of work, right? Instead, it's like, how do I get straight to work and get more done?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I wrestle with it. I'm a terrible procrastinator.
Mm.
Here, there's a thing that happens. I don't know. Maybe this is as you get older, but I bet everybody's experienced this where you're like, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get that thing done. And I was procrastinating. And then finally I felt ready to get it done and it just flew by. Right?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, if I wasn't such an idiot, I could have just done that at first. But the answer is no, of course you couldn't have.
Oh, I heard such an interesting quote about this recently. The time you spend procrastinating is when you're doing the passive work to get things done. You're working things out in your head. You're thinking about, like, right. if you just did it from the beginning, it possibly would have taken you a few hours. But the time you've done thinking about it while you've been, you know,
right.
we call it procrastinating, but maybe, you know, prioritizing other things. You use that
right.
passive.
It's called mulling things over. Yeah. yeah.
You use that passive.
Well, the problem is that you make yourself miserable, right? You make yourself miserable doing it. If it wasn't a miserable thing, if you were just sort of like, oh, well, I'm going to go for a walk. That's always the great thing, right? Like, go for a walk and think it through. And we've been told to do that for like 14 million years. And everyone is like, I will go for a walk once I'm done.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in my life thinking about that and about how much better it is to just forgive yourself. Rather than being angry at yourself procrastinating. And I found that to be really yeah. helpful. Just not anymore. I find myself very rarely mad at myself for putting something off.
No, that's good. That's really important, right? Because guilt is so counterproductive. And guilt is a big part of our industry. Mm-hmm. We're a very guilt-driven industry. You know, you need to know more languages. You need to know more things. You need to get more done. You need to be more productive. And the flip side is, like, you kind of do.
Yeah.
right? You can't be like, well, I don't know, COBOL's a great language, unless you want to go program COBOL. I don't know. Maybe there, I mean, there's good work there too. I don't know is the answer that I have here. I have no solutions.
I read a story, Sarah, that reminded me of what you were just saying. I can't remember, but it was one of my favorite pieces, probably like Oliver Sacks or something, on the brain. And it was saying that, yeah, they kind of like measure the electrical activity or whatever. And those moments of inspiration that come to you, you know, where you sort of get to the idea of how to solve it, or maybe, yeah, you decide, okay, now I'm ready to work, is when you relax and then the whole brain kind of works in concert. Like when you're focusing on something, you're using these little specific parts of the brain. And when you manage to sort of like relax in the background, all this activity kind of, they start to work together and synthesize things in a way. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
What are we all thinking about for this year? It's 2021. Here we go. What do you think is good? What's going to change? What's going to be different?
Well, I will say, I didn't want to bring it up because we talked about it at the end of the year, but I do have to bring it up. It does seem like I've been thinking that maybe crypto, this is like going to be an even bigger year for crypto, just because with all the money printing and the devaluation of like fiat money, it feels like there's just such a strong cohort of people who are ready to like hold the line and get invested in this stuff. I don't know. For some reason, I've been thinking a lot about like, yeah, it's a little bit unfair when software is money because the people who make software are already quite well off. But like, I don't know. I've been feeling like kind there's going to be works. A lot of that, at least for the first 6 months of this year.
Money printer goes burr until it doesn't.
Yeah, I like that tweet.
Look, I think you're the way that people react to and trade and deal with especially Bitcoin makes that very realistic, right? Like they're going to continue to double down. The thing that's wild to me is that you almost never hear the word blockchain anymore. Like everybody was like, no, it's not about Bitcoin. It's not about Bitcoin. It's about the blockchain. That is where it's exciting. Yeah. That's where the action is.
It's because people got tired of being like, what if we have my daughter's ballet recital on the BitChain? Blockchain. And you're just like, everyone calm down. Well,
and in the next, in 36 weeks, it's actually going to be there on your computer ready to watch.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the game. When Bitcoin is going up, you talk about Bitcoin. When Bitcoin is going down, you say, no, it's all about blockchain. That's just how you know. When your party's in power, you cut taxes. And when your party's out, you complain about deficits. You know,
it's just a game. It's the sine wave hype cycle of blockchain. That's right. It's one or the other. We're back to a currency cycle this year. And then maybe 2022 will be the year of blockchain again if Bitcoin crashes.
Yeah.
What about you, Sarah?
Well, this year is the year the world doesn't fall apart. Is kind of my hope. Like, I just think that, like, I mean, like, hopefully great technology will come of it and that kind of thing. But I think just like seeing what the new normal looks like. And like, this has been a really good time for technology to be like serve a support function. When I listen to stories about how states in the US or countries are coming together to deliver the vaccine, and you think about the technology that was built in order to facilitate that or not, right? Like some places it's just, you know, we give this guy a box and he gives people the vaccine. But in other places it's, you know, we're very thoughtful and we track these things and how many people have had to step up over the past year and jump in and build supporting technology. And so my hope is that I see that continue and for technology to, you know, to help folks as they start to learn what the new normal is and maybe return to seeing family members and seeing it like that. So this is the first year that I'm like kind of not really bullish on any particular technology, but more like looking into, you know, what will become, how can we make the world better or, you know, not fall apart this year.
I like it. Bullish on life this year.
I like that combo too. Like there's an implication there of like sometimes it's giant databases and sometimes it's a guy on a bike with a notebook and like whichever one's going to work is the one we should go with. You know, maybe we're past the era of total techno solutionism. I mean, not in Silicon Valley, but in general, it feels like everybody's going like, okay, you know, we're going to use Google Sheets for some things and then do other things just by sending each other a couple emails. So maybe.
In Israel, where they're doing really well, that seemed to be the case because everybody has a digital medical ID, I guess. Yeah. And so they've been doing a really good job. But then, like you were saying, once you have that efficacy from the technology, they're like, once we finish with everybody who's supposed to come today to get their vaccines, we just go outside. And if there's a pizza delivery guy, we're like, do you want the vaccine? He's like, yeah, give it to me. So like it frees you up to just do the human stuff if your technology is working well.
Yeah, that's right. That is true. You get your baseline done and then you go and you see what else you can do using those same tools. That's great For me, I really do. I'm predicting like a hangover year as we're talking. I'm just sort of like, I think there's a lot of like cold light of morning stuff that's going to happen where we're like, oh, okay, that didn't go well. And tech is about to be relentlessly essentially sued by the government. Like our yeah. largest organizations and the government are kind of going to war. So there's going to be a lot more sort of legal stuff. But, you know, it's literally like the hangover, like, wow, that was, woof, boy, that got out of control last night.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, you're like, oh, boy, it is a lot to look at right now. Like, just the light is too much. And, you know, somebody's like, hey, do you want any oysters? And you're like, no, no, my God, what are you talking? Like, just we are about to be in a... I think we're going to have a little bit of that in our industry. So, you know, and then, you know, everyone will still say that Rust is very exciting, that that'll keep happening.
So there's, I think when the smoke clears in the light of morning, we're going to see just how bad this inequality has gotten during the pandemic, right? Like, because I think for the technologists, coders in this field in general, we're relatively untouched, but there are many of us that have family members that are very far away from that and have been really affected financially. And so I'm hoping that we can see folks take some responsibility for the inequality and step up and help other people. That's what I would really love to see this year.
I mean, I think that it's just, yeah, the conversation has changed. And you're right. I think after once things are in the light, there's just facts rather than conversations and debates. It's just like, wow, you know, different communities got hit so hard by the pandemic. Tech didn't.
Yeah.
Tech got off, almost got free. And so how are we going to bring that to everybody else?
All right. I want to shout out a email from a listener because I promised myself that I would start doing that. I've been getting them and saying to myself, okay, this will be the episode, but we never get around to it. So starting off 2021, right.
Mailbag.
We got a great, we're going to dip it in the mailbag here. It's from Murali. So thanks for the email, Murali. It says, I was listening to the React View episode and Paul's frustrations about the virtual DOM. I recently ran into Svelte, which is a JavaScript framework, which explicitly makes two different decisions to most. No virtual DOM, tight coupling HTML, CSS, and JavaScript top to bottom. So maybe we'll talk about this in a future episode. I'll send you guys the links, but just off the top of your head, what do you think? Svelte.dev, it says here.
Well, we used it at work, and actually people are starting to really like it at Postlight. If you go to textmoji.app, that is
Svelte. Oh, I love Textmoji.
That's all Svelte. And,
huge fan.
Yeah, so I think what people have said, I've watched the many a Slack conversation about Svelte, is they're like, yeah, it takes a minute, and then you get it, and you're like, yeah, okay. I think it feels just very web-like, like just like, okay, the things I learned about the web apply here too, as opposed to being like, we've turned the web into an abstraction, which is a state machine that you can register in a zizzle-zazzle, and you're just like, oh my, right? So I think that's it. Like Svelte is like, hey, what if HTML was a first-class citizen of your reality?
Wow, this is wild. Very cool. Definitely check this out.
Svelte.
I like to dip in the mailbag. I think we should make the podcast a little bit more interactive if we can.
We need the producers to get us a mailbag theme.
Yeah, we need a mailbag theme. That's our request.
Boop, 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 boop. Okay. Mailbag.
We have dozens of lifeboats. I actually noticed that this really picked up over the holidays. So I'm thinking, I don't know, Sarah, you'll have to let us know, look at the data, but like maybe when people were off of the break, they did a bit more contributing to Stack Overflow than when they're regularly working because the rate of lifeboats picked up a lot. I'm not sure why.
That makes a lot of
from
sense.
From like December 23rd on. Yeah. Yeah. We got a bunch. So yeah, we can put a bunch of these in the bank. This is from Kockenbacher, awarded December 15th, actually. R plots. Is there a way to draw a border, shadow, or buffer around text labels? You better believe there is. And we will include it with the code in the show notes. All credits to Greg Snow. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. Like I said, you can always email us podcast@stackoverflow.com. And this year, I will read from the mailbag. So if you have something to share, a cool language, a cool framework, a cool whatever you want to shout out, send me an email and we will try and get it on the show. I'm Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow. You can always find me on Twitter @BenPopper.
And I'm Sarah Chips, Director of Community here at Stack Overflow. And you can find me on GitHub @SarahJoe.
I'm Paul Ford, friend of Stack Overflow. Check out my company, Postlight.